Blog Talk Radio.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is Sunday night, and that's the main top of the base. It means it's time for the weekend wrap. A lot of action this weekend, a lot of free TV, some on not-so-free TV. But, hey, let's start reviewing some of the action and talk about what's coming up next. Let's start with our good friend, John, the Iceman Scully. John, how are we doing tonight, my man?
Everything's good, my man. Just got out of a movie and ready to talk.
All right. Well, let's start talking about some of the action down there in your neck of the woods, my man. We had some good bounce down there, even though out here I don't get bounce TV, but I know there was some bounce on, I believe, this weekend. The first starting down there at Kissimmee. We saw Mr. Tony Thompson get back in the ring with Malik Scott. John, did you see any of this action, or were you part of any of this?
Yeah, I was actually at the fight. I was at the show and just kind of hanging out with some of the guys. And, it was a good show. You know, Malik boxed well, just like you figured he would. Tony's little spring chicken, and he tried very hard, but he just couldn't catch Malik. Malik was a little too slick for him at this point.
Yeah, and that extra 30 pounds, I see it says Tony came in about 263, so I imagine that was a little heavy even for Tony. But John, we had some very good prospects on that card. One that we're going to have on the show Tuesday, Mr. Miguel Cruz. I believe you're a little familiar with his work. He was 10-0 going into the fight. You want to tell us a little bit about Miguel?
Yeah, well, Miguel actually trains at the gym I train at in Florida. I've actually sparred with him before. And it's a funny thing, I was telling someone, I sparred with Miguel about a year ago for the first time. And, he was very strong. Very strong, young guy, undefeated, very strong. And I remember a few weeks later, I was telling someone about sparring with him. And the guy said, yeah, the welterweight. And I go, no, this kid's like a middleweight. And they said, no, Miguel's a welterweight. I said, no, I'm telling you, the kid I spar with here. And he trains with O'Neill. And he says, no, that's him, he's a welterweight. And I had to look it up because the kid is so strong and big that I thought the whole time after we boxed, I thought for sure he was a super middleweight, and that's how big he is and how strong he was. And I didn't know until I read on the internet on his record that he's actually a welterweight. He's probably the strongest welterweight I've ever sparred with. Just a good kid. And he knocked this kid out the other night with a perfect. He hooked to the body and came right up to the head and just decimated this kid. It was a textbook. And, Miguel's really a hard worker. I think you're going to enjoy talking to him, and you're going to enjoy watching him progress as a professional.
Yes, it sounds like a very nice young man. And like you said, he comes in with a very impressive record, 10-0, and dispenses of his opponent right away. First round, TKO, late round. Another gentleman that was on the fight that we've had on the show, and we're kind of familiar with his work, also undefeated, but a lightweight, and that's Mr. Gervonta Davis. You want to talk to us a little bit about his fight? This was another one that didn't last too long, did it, John?
Is that that's the kid from Las Vegas?
Yes.
He's with Floyd. Actually, I was sitting in the front row at the where the bleachers were, and it was a small venue. And I was looking down at my phone, and I happened to look up, And as that fight was just about to start, they were walking to the ring, and Floyd Mayweather Jr. was standing literally right in front of him, like a foot away. I guess he came into town unexpected, and you know, wasn't publicized, but Floyd was there for his fighter. And he just happened to be standing right next to me as I looked up. So that was exciting for the crowd. And the kid is good. That was actually my first time seeing him. But he was good, very sharp kid. And he fought an opponent that they came to fight. So he was impressive, especially, like I said, I had never really heard of him before up until the other night. And he definitely made a good first impression on me.
Yes, he's a young man that we have had on the show before, and we met him when we were in Vegas at another venue. Very personable young man, really like his style. I mean, you know, he's a very good fighter. You wouldn't really expect him. I mean, you know, he's a Floyd fighter, you know, he's still quiet and reserved, nothing like, you know, you would expect. I mean, he's no Adrian Broner in the sense of all the fanfare and bravado, but he's certainly a young man that has a lot of talent.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, and we don't need another Broner, you know, to be honest with you. Not even anything against Adrian, but, you know, that type of shtick, you know, whatever it is, we don't need a bunch of that. You know what I mean? You need one or two, and it'd probably be better for them if there's only one or two of those guys around so they stand out a little more. Because if you have a bunch of them, nobody's going to care. They're going to care even less than they may care now. So I prefer to see the more reserved and professional type of kids.
Most definitely. I already have a semi-built-in prejudice against the Cincinnati fighters, so we won't even get into my interpretation of Adrian Broner. But I always think that, you know, as soon as I think about Cincinnati fighters, I always think of Aaron Pryor. And I'm not talking about ability, but I'm talking about the tragedy part. I don't know if you got to see any of the bouts in Kissimmee, but we had some fights in Kissimmee Saturday. Were you familiar with any of those guys that were on the fight? I mean, it was another, like you say, you know, rather small venue. But the thing that I like is that, you know, it seems like you're having a lot of fights down in Florida now. It's become somewhat of a preferred venue, just like out here in California. PBC, I believe, has just signed a deal with Fox, where Fox is going to have some of their the bouts on. I believe they start January 23rd on Fox. I'm not sure. But, John, how much more interesting or how much more exciting is the Florida boxing scene becoming now that you have more accessibility to, you know, TV and the different venues now?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely, the PBC shows are adding a lot to it. One of my boxers is actually fighting next Saturday, this coming Saturday, on a PBC show in Miami. And he actually turned pro a couple months ago on a PBC show in, I believe it was St. Petersburg. So they're definitely all over Florida. They're making their mark for sure. And I like the shows. I've been to four of the shows so far. I've been to ones in D.C. and Virginia, and I like the way they do the shows. They add a little pizzazz to the show, the way they do things, and they're definitely picking up steam and making their mark in the game. That's for sure.
Now, John, I mean, at first it was a lot of, you know, adversity. You know, people, you know, saying that this was going to water down boxing and this and that. But you know, and some of the other well-known trainers, you, Ronnie Shields, Virgil Hunter. I mean, you know, all of you guys said that this could do nothing but help boxing. John, are you still sticking to that? And do you think that the PBS series has proven itself to the fans now to where, you know, they know that this is the real deal?
Oh, for sure, for sure. These are, I'll say this much, they're very, I noticed it on a couple shows ago when I went to the one in Clearwater or St. Petersburg. But what I like about it, they match the guys tough. I mean, like, you know, a lot of promoters, you know, they put on shows and they're young, overcomers. They match them very easily. Not even necessarily easily, but fights that they know they're going to win. But they had a kid here who actually trained in my gym named Javante Starks from Minneapolis, who's a very good welterweight, very good fighter. And he, I could see from the first round of his fight, he mentioned to the guy next to him, I go, man, they didn't do this guy, they didn't do Javante any favors with this fight. And he actually ended up getting beat. And he's an Al Haymon fighter. He signed with Al Haymon. And he was outgunned. They put him in very deep. So that's one thing that I think in the long run is good for the boxing, is that they're testing these kids early.
See, now, that's kind of what I don't understand, because, you know, one of the criticisms was, you know, oh, well, you know, hey, Al Haymon controls it. He's going to make sure that his fighters have nothing but cupcakes. Da-da-da-da-da. I mean, you know, it was going to be a throwback. It was going to be a throwback to the Don King, Bob Arum day. You know what I mean? You know, and it seems to be just the opposite.
That's far from the case.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be just the opposite. Like you said, I mean, you know, these guys are being, you know, matched very, very tough. You know, I mean, even though, you know, we might look at it, but I mean, you know, to me, a good example of that, even though Tony Harrison won the fight, and we're going to talk about that fight next, you know, we're all talking about, you know, that he was going to be overmatched by this kid McCullough, but it turned out to be exactly the opposite. Like you said, I think they're putting in some stiff competition, and I think it can be nothing but good for the sport.
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah. No, it was It was good to see. Cause, you know, I'm used to going to some shows where when you get the kid who's 11-0, 12-0, it's almost not even. It's like anticlimactic. You can watch him because you say, all right, you know, he's gonna at this point an off TV fight. You know, he's gonna probably blow this guy out in two or three rounds. And Javante went out there, and you know, and Javante's a very good fighter, but he met his match. I mean, he was put in very deep, and you know, you pay attention to it. You know, you couldn't turn away because. You know, I was saying to my friend after the second, third round, I was like, man, he doesn't, things don't change here. Javante, he's gonna lose this fight. And, you know, you generally don't find yourself saying that during prelim fights when the favorite, you know, is fighting. You don't generally, after the third or fourth round, get the impression that he's going to lose. So that was kind of a new thing for me.
Oh, most definitely. Like you said, I mean, you know, the guy, now the guy that's on the other side of the ring knows he has a chance to, you know, build his credibility up. He's in front of a crowd, and, you know, hey, he's beating an Al Haymon fighter, you know. So, you know, I mean, all of this goes into, you know, the sport, the rivalry, and I think it could be nothing but good for boxing. John, did you happen to be able to watch any of the action last night out of Houston?
No, I had to do I was actually out trick-or-treating, and I was out doing my thing. I only got a few more years left of trick-or-treating, so I had to take advantage. I was actually in the process of helping someone move and things like that, so I did not catch the fights last night.
Hey, man, I mean, it was really good. They showed, you know, some of the fighters, you know, some of the kids, the costumes that they wore and whatnot. I mean, it was, you know, they can, you know, they can say what they want, but, you know, the whole atmosphere of the fights on the PBC series is just, you know, it's family friendly. and you get to know a lot about the boxers, which I think is very important. What about you, John? Don't you think it's important for the fans to get to know more about the boxers and their personalities?
Yeah, of course, of course. You got to connect. And that's exactly why Boom Boom Mancini is in the Hall of Fame today, as an example, because he used to be on the CBS fights, and they followed him, and everyone in the world, everybody in the boxing world, knew his story about his father, and his father not getting a title shot, and him fighting for his father, and that's how they found out. You know, they didn't just let him fight, and it wasn't just his fighting ability, it was his story, and people connect to him, and that's how he built himself up. That's how they made him a big star, because people knew who he was, and they knew what his story was. And you want to be able to connect to a fighter, or else, no matter how good he is, you're going to forget about him. Like, a couple of days after you see him fight, you're going to forget. But if he has a story that you're made aware of, then you're gonna connect to him. And that's the great thing about that aspect of the show.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you bring up my homie. Every time you mention Youngstown and Boom Boom, you know, it's kind of synonymous. Harry Arroyo, you know, we had some very good fighters come out of there, and you know, they, because of the background, the old steel mill background, they were able to incorporate their stories very well into the common fabric. So you know, they weren't you know, all glamoring, but you know, they were the blue collar workers, which. John, and you know about that. I mean, that this is the area that you come up in. You were a blue collar fighter. I mean, you know what that's all about.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not everybody comes up the same way, you know. You know, a guy like Boom Boom, you know, he came from that city, and he had the tough time, and he had the story, and you know, I mean, realistically, being completely honest, you know, he wasn't the most gifted athlete. But, he fought. He was a fighter. He's a fan-friendly fighter. And I'll tell you another thing I noticed about Boom Boom Mancini, and I challenge people to really look at this. You know, a lot of people, I think, subconsciously, when they think of Boom Boom, they just think of a tough white kid who comes to fight, you know, face first. Just say, you watch him, even in the fight he lost against Bramble, both fights, you know, he was an excellent body puncher. He moved his head. He doubled up on his punches. I mean, Boom Boom Mancini was a very good fighter. I think he doesn't get the credit. Even though he got in the Hall of Fame, I still don't think he gets the credit he deserves for what he was about in the ring. I think he was a better fighter tactically than he gets credit for.
Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you there. You know, I mean, even a lot of us, you know, locally, you know, kind of when he first came on the scene, you know, we were kind of looked upon him as, you know, the brawler, the Rocky type. You know, it did take a while. You had to watch, to stand back and watch him for a while before you really appreciate the dedication to his craft. Because, like you said, I mean, you know, he wasn't the most gifted fighter in the world. You know, a lot of that was, you know, hours spent in the gym, road work and whatnot. And we watched him, you know, so it was. To us, you know, it was, you know, watching him come from the amateurs and you know, it was you know, kind of a Cinderella story.
Right.
Son, once again, we're back down in Florida this week. Next Saturday, I believe it is, November 7th, we're in Miami. We got a couple kids here, you know, outside of Florida, people might not know that much about him. John, are you familiar with Mr. Lawson and his undefeated record?
No, well, I'll tell you the truth. My kid is on the show. We're heading down Thursday. But I don't even know who's on the show. I haven't even seen the card yet. I don't know who the main event is or anything. Who is it again? Who's the guy?
The main event is Frederick Lawson against Kevin Bazier.
Right. My kid was actually just up in Montreal sparring with Kevin. I hear he's a very good fighter, but I know he's in touch outside with a kid from Florida. So I haven't seen either one of them fight, to be honest with you, so I can't really say it for sure. But I do know that the kid that I train, he spars with Kevin, and he told me Kevin is a very good fighter.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your fighter? Where what's his name? Where is he from? You just mentioned is he from Canada or?
No, he's actually from here. He's from Florida, but his manager, Chris, actually manages Lucien Bute, and my fighter, Bruno Berdician, he's Romanian as well. So Chris manages both of them, and so he was up there in camp with Lucien, because Lucien has a big fight coming up, and with James DeGale. So they're all in camp together doing some sparring. And that's kind of how I got connected with the whole team there.
Oh, okay. Well, John, we know, you know, anybody that's anyone in the sport, knows who Mr. John Iceman Scully is, and I'm sure you came with high recommendations, but now in HBO Vegas. Long-awaited fight, Timothy Bradley versus Brandon Rios. Who you got, John?
You know, I'm going to go and I'll say that it has the potential to be a very good fight, but I'm going to go with Bradley. I think we talked about this before, but the addition of Teddy Atlas to his team. You know, I think Teddy is a tough trainer for certain people. You know, certain people he would not mix well with. I don't think he would get results with. But from what I know, I don't know Timothy very well, you know, personally. But as a fighter, I get the impression that Teddy's style might bode well for him. You know, Teddy's training style, his real hard-nosed, regimented type of training style, I think might be good for him. And one thing, I mean, the way to beat Brandon, there's no secret. You know, it's not like a big mystery on how to do it. It's just you need a trainer to implement it. And I think Teddy is the type of guy that he'll force it. He'll force your hand, and he'll force you to implement that style. So I think if he listens to Teddy, I think Timothy's going to be A-OK in this fight.
Now, you know, you speak of no-nonsense training. Now, Timothy comes from a no-nonsense type training. I mean, Hall Diaz is no walk in the park. Now,
right.
Now, I'm, you know, I can see maybe, sometimes it's just time to move on. But do you really see that there's that, you know, when you mention the training styles, that much difference between Teddy and Joel? And what do you see as the difference between the two?
I mean, to be honest, I'm not extremely overly familiar with Joel's, you know, style, but I do know, I've dealt with Teddy before, and I do know that Teddy is like pretty much like, you know, steel trap. I mean, it is what it is, and that's it, and you've got to do it that way. But, you know, with the training situation with Tim and Joel, I mean, you know, I've always said it's just like a marriage. You know, a guy could be great for you. He could be a great trainer for you. But the thing is, you don't like the way he treats his wife, you know, or anything. You don't like the way you don't like his politics. You don't like whatever. When you get to, you know, sometimes it's actually a detriment to get to know a fighter too well or to get to know a trainer too well because, you know, you start to either, you know, it's possible to lose respect for a person outside of boxing and it affects the boxing. So we don't know what happened with Tim and his trainer and why it ended the way it did. Who really knows? You know, I mean, Tim, I think a lot of people were hard on Tim because of the way he handled it. Apparently he didn't even tell him. He just left and his trainer read about it or something. That's the impression I got. And a lot of people are against him for that. And if that is the way it is, I mean, it happened. I mean, that's not too cool, but we don't know what precipitated that. We don't know their relationship at all. So unless we're there to really judge, you know, it's like when a married couple gets divorced and you hear one of their sides to it. And you're like, oh, it's terrible. How could that be? And then the other person isn't saying anything. And you know, if you heard their story, you'd have a different point of view. So I reserve my judgment until if and when I ever hear the full story.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, sometimes it's just a matter of you know, you needing to move on. You know, it might not have been under the best of circumstances, like you said, you know, like you know, some married people, you get divorced, but you remain friends. You know, some you get divorced and, you know, you're throwing, you know, pins in the voodoo doll for the rest of their lives. So, I mean, you know, like you said, you know, it's kind of like a marriage. You know, we saw that last night, which was why I was asking you, I asked you if you watched the fights, because we have another example of that. Jermell Charlo, his first time with a new trainer without Ronnie Shields in his corner. And he fought the veteran last night and came away with the victory. So, you know, I mean, it wasn't, you know, that, you know, we really saw, we were able to see anything different from the Charlo twin because we were used to seeing, you know, his style of fighting. We noticed the power, you know, but, hey, you know, it's just, like I said, you don't exactly know the whys, the wherefores, but both sides move on, and hey, you know, that it's just the nature of the game. The other guy that I'd like to ask you about, because I know you are very familiar with his style, and this is a fight that you kind of told me more about before he came on the professional scene. And I'm talking about Lobachenko. He's going to be fighting again for his WBO title. Do you see anyone really, you know, catching this young man? I mean, you know, this is one of the most brilliant young men in the featherweight division that we've seen in a long time.
Right. No, he's special. And you know, even – Like the fact that he only has a few fights, I mean, it really magnifies it. Like, it's really, you know, what's happening is amazing with him, what he's able to do with experience. You know, because I always tell people it takes time to build professional experience, and there's certain tools that you need to gain over the course of a professional career. And this guy walks on the scene like he already had 30 pro fights already. You know, I very rarely see that. So that alone impressed me tremendously.
Yeah, and you know, the way he dismantled, you know, his Mr. Russell was like, you know, I didn't even know what to say. But you know, the thing of it is now, you know, I think, I'll ask you, Scully, how many weight classes do you think is possible for this young man to go up? I'm thinking at least four, if not three.
Well, you know, we don't know because of his body type. I mean, you know, that's like almost like a thing today where people are just expected to move up, or win more titles. And, you know, where not even that long ago, it was a big deal to move up. You know, people didn't just move up for the heck of it, but now they do. But then again, I would say you had Marlon Starling, who was a welterweight for his, not only was he a welterweight for his entire professional career, but he was a welterweight for his entire amateur career. He was 147 from the time he was in the Junior Olympics at age 15 all the way until his last pro fight at age 32. And you have Marvin Hagler, who was a middleweight as an amateur, and he was a middleweight all the way until his last fight. So those guys just didn't move up, and it just wasn't in their DNA to move up. So Lomachenko, I mean, you know, to me, if he could stay at that weight and dominate it forever, that would be fine for me. I mean, not everybody's meant to move up. You know, so we'll have to see. We'll really have to see what his body structure really entails for him.
Yeah, you know, I think him and the young Chocolatito, you know, those are two gentlemen, you know, if I would love to see him stay in those two weight classes forever. But, you know, then again, you know, it monetarily, you know, do you want to stay there too? So, I mean, there's a lot of things to think about, you know, and like you said, there's body types. But, John, hey, man, as usual, time flies when we're having fun. So, hey, right. Tell everybody where they can find you on social media and any stories or anything you might have in cup. Like you said, you'll be in Miami this weekend. So why don't you tell everyone what you have coming up?
So, like I said, if anybody out there listening, boxing fans, if they're in Miami for that show, you know, I hope to run into you and I encourage it, actually. You know, I'm on my Facebook talking boxing all day. John the Iceman, and the Iceman is one word, John the Iceman Scully at Facebook. And I have Iceman John Scully on Twitter and Iceman John Scully on Instagram. And it's pretty much 90%. Boxing talk on my pages.
Most definitely. Well, hey, thanks a lot, my man. And like I said, we're going to get the young man Miguel Cruz on Tuesday. And hey, maybe next Tuesday we'll get on your fight when he emerges victorious. Always have room in the
process. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you having me.
No problem, John. You have a great night, man. Talk to you next week.
You too, buddy. Thank you very much.
Well, that was John the Iceman Scully. Like you said, he'll have his fighter in the ring in Miami next week on the PBS series. Maybe we'll get another Caleb Plant event and get to see another one of these young prospects on that's going to be on the show. By the way, Caleb Plant will also be on this week's show, and hopefully we'll hear back from Jamel. Charlo, as well as Mr. Tony Harrison. So we're looking forward to a great show Tuesday. But right now, it's time for a little straight talk with Mr. Ronnie Shields. So let's get Ronnie on the phone. Good evening, Mr. Shields. How are you this evening?
Doing great, doing great.
Glad to hear. Have you wrung your socks out yet, or is it still wet out there in Houston?
Actually, it haven't rained today, so it was a good day.
Oh, okay. All right. I was looking on TV last night. It seemed like you guys were still a little soggy, but, hey, we have a lot of things to talk about. And, you know, the first subject I want to start, Ronnie, is Guerrero Rigondeaux. There's so much, you know, and we talk about it all the time, man. You know, about the politics and the garbage involved. What the hell is going on now? What, the WBO wants to strip him and talking about he can't. But what is going on with Mr. Rigondeaux, Ronnie?
Well, you know, the WBO, they have stripped him. They stripped him the other day. And the WBA making him a champion in recess. What that means is that since he has a fight scheduled, but it's someone that they is not going to sanction. So that means that somebody else will fight for the belt, and then he would fight the winner if they can make a deal. So basically he's lost his belt behind, you know, a lot of bull that's going around and, you know, with these organizations. You know, the thing about it is, you know, like Guillermo, you know, when he was with Top Rank, everything was fine. They approved every opponent that he fought, you know, with no questions asked. But now that, you know, he's with, you know, with his other promoters, Kareed from Miami, you know, nobody really knows them. And so, you know, these organizations, they do what they basically they want to do. You know, if they're not making any money, then, you know, if you can't make them money, then they're going to take your belt. They want somebody to keep fighting, you know, so they can make money. And that's what they're all about. They're about money. You know, they knew the kid was having problems with the manager, you know, and still having problems with the manager. But at the same time, they want him to continue to fight and continue to make money for them, you know. So, but he hasn't. And so you got to go by their rules, and their rules states that they're going to take your title. So that's basically what happened.
So here's a kid with, you know, an untapped amount of talent, great at his particular division, great in his position, but if he can't find a fight or if he can't find a suitable opponent, if that organization is sanctioning him, don't they have a certain responsibility, right?
Well, you know, the problem is they haven't ordered a mandatory defense for him. So if you don't order a mandatory defense for him, then that means he can fight anybody he wants to. But the problem is they didn't order a mandatory defense for him, so he had nobody to fight. And so by their own rules, though, if you don't fight in a certain amount of time, they can strip you of the belt. So, you know, they just going against their own rules.
Okay. you know, I guess that's why we're just fans of the sport and don't have to go through all that, because it seems to be a very tangled web here. And you know, every time you read an article, it seems to want to point the finger, but nobody wants to give a solution.
Well, you know, again, they keep making up different rules, and they want you to follow rules that you don't even know about, because he haven't had a mandatory defense in over a year, because the WBO never appointed a mandatory defense. So if they don't appoint a mandatory defense, then if you don't want to fight, you don't really have to fight. You know, you could defend the title anytime you want to, but if they don't appoint a mandatory for you, then you could do whatever you want to do. But they didn't like it because he wasn't making any money for them. So they say, well, you're not fighting. So since you're not fighting, you know, that means we're going to strip you of the belt. You know, but again, you know, they only require you to make mandatory defenses. But just mandatory is supposed to be maybe every 6 to 9 months is a mandatory defense. But if you don't appoint a mandatory guy that he has to fight, then if he don't want to fight, that means he don't have to fight. That's per their own rules. But again, they said you haven't fought in almost a year, and Ringendahl keeps saying, well, you never gave me a mandatory. You never said who the mandatory was, and you never ordered a mandatory defense. So I didn't want to fight because I'm trying to get out of my managerial contract, and so I'm just going by what you're telling me. And so now they're telling them, well, we're going to strip you anyway.
It just seems like it's the fighter that's caught between the rock and the hard place and not the organization, when it should be the other way around. It just seems so wrong to me when we have some of the, you know, we have a kid here that's great, has the potential to be a great fighter, and then we have, you know, we just have some people that are getting bouts and getting paydays when the young guys and the guys that are trying to establish themselves, I think, are the ones that should be given the opportunities. But hey, maybe that's just me. Ryan, let's talk about some of the weekend action here. And the first one I'm going to start with, of course, is your ex-student. He did a very good job, Mr. Jamal Charlo. What did you think about his performance in the ring?
Well, Jamal Charlo, not Jamal. It was Jamal.
Jamal, I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, he had the right guy in front of him, which was good for him. So anytime you're calling in with a new trainer, you want to get the right guy that you can feel comfortable with after a couple of rounds, and the trainer can feel comfortable so you can try whatever things that you need to try to, you know, to win the fight. And, you know, he looked good. He, you know, he's a very good fighter, you know, and he showed that, and, you know, and I was glad that he won.
Most definitely. I thought he looked good. Did he, like you said, did exactly what he was supposed to do. And I'm looking to see him in the ring again. Now, we also had Tony Harrison in the ring, Ronnie, and we saw what happened to him his last time in the ring. But he came back, put on a good fight. But, Ronnie, did Tony seem to be have a little ring rust on him to you?
Well, I don't think it's ring rust. I just think that, you know, Tony, I don't know, he starts off really well, but he kind of falls, you know, he kind of gets lackadaisical toward the end of the fight, you know, like when, you know, he fought Willie Nelson, he got knocked out, you know, I think, you know, in the second to the last round, I forget which one it was, but, you know, the same thing almost happened to him. He took a good shot, but he took that shot. You know, he's lucky that, you know, that Cecil wasn't as powerful as Willie Nelson, you know. Otherwise, the same thing could have happened to him. But, you know, look, he's a tall fighter, man. He's a really tall guy with a good jab. And, you know, he just has no power. So his problem is going to be when he fights these guys that can walk through him, how can he keep them off? And that's going to be a big problem for him later in fights. He's really good with that jab he got. He has a really good jab that keeps you off balance. But once you start timing it, you know, like Cecil was doing, you know, last night, then you could see where, you know, you can exploit a lot of things that Tony does. But I thought it was a really good fight, man. Cecil finally came to fight. Like, after about the eighth round, he finally decided he was going to fight. And I thought he picked it up the last two rounds. But, you know, in the sport, man, you have to do it from the beginning. You can't wait till the end to try to, you know, come and win the fight. You know, you have to take chances early. And that's what Cecil didn't do. And this is why Tony, you know, got a big lead and was confident.
Ronnie, the ring announcers and commentators was talking a lot about Cecil's particular style, especially during the early rounds, the way he was holding his hands, how wide his stance was. Ronnie, even though the announcers were trying to tell the audience, if you weren't an experienced boxing fan, you probably didn't know what they were talking about. Can you kind of explain to the novice fan exactly what they meant about him holding his hands a little too high and his stance being too wide where he couldn't counter at all?
Well, you know, I think Cecil was just a little afraid that he was going to get hit with something early. So what he was trying to do, he was just trying, basically what he was trying to do, he was trying to let Tony punch himself out, you know, just, you know, not get hit. He didn't want to get hit with any hard shots. What he wanted to do was, you know, just let Tony, you know, he was going to try to find an opening, but, you know, but it really wasn't nothing there because Tony's arms were so long that Cecil didn't see anything. You know, he kept his hands up to try to let Tony get closer so he can try to counter. But again, you know, with the stance that he had, you know, it was just too wide. And, you know, and his punches was just going to come way short. So it didn't make sense for him to do it that way. But he felt that, you know, I can probably get in something if this guy make a mistake. But, you know, Tony was really smart at the beginning, just kept him on the end of the jab every now and then he was throwing right hands, and Cesar could never counter because Tony just wasn't there. Now, if it was a guy, say, short arms, who really had to get closer to him, that style would probably work, you know. And all you got to do is go look at some of Joshua Clady's fights, and it's the same thing. You know, Clady, you know, is a smart guy. He wants you to mess up and get close to him, and then that way the counter is there. It doesn't matter how wide your legs are, because if you're going to get close to him, then all his counter punches is going to, you know, it's going to land because you're right there to be hit. But in Cecil's case, you know, Tony never got close enough to him so he can get off anything. So basically he gave away all those rounds. And his corner kept telling him, look, man, you know, you gotta throw punches. You got to let your hands go. You can't just sit up there and look for one shot, which is what he was doing.
Yeah. You know, like you said, and at one point, I believe it was the sixth round, maybe the seventh, where his corner got really frustrated, and you know, was just, you could hear it when the announcer went and asked him. He's like, you know, I keep asking him, I keep telling him, but you know, in the ninth, tenth round, like you said, Cecil really came through, did what he, you know, the best he could, but he had just dug too far hole for himself. Ronnie, they sure had some extra time, and they showed the young super middleweight prospect, Mr. Caleb Plant. Ronnie, what did you think about the young man from Tennessee?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Caleb. I think Caleb, you know, he can be a good boxer. You know, he needs some work, though, but he fought a veteran, you know. So Brunson has been around for a very long time. You know, he's fought some really good fighters. So he knew how to handle himself in there. But, you know, look, I thought Caleb did a good job. You know, he won the fight, of course. But, you know, there's a few things that I think he has to change. But, you know, other than that, you know, look, he's a young guy, you know. And when you fight these veterans, man, that, you know, that have seen everything, you're not going to show them nothing, anything new. So a lot of shots that Brunson, you know, he was given to Caleb, you know, so he could take it away. Caleb didn't realize that, hey, you know, okay, I'm going to hit him with this right hand and come back right back with the hook. And that's exactly what Brunson wanted him to do. But, you know, Caleb, you know, he didn't mix it up enough to try to confuse Brunson, because, you know, Brunson has seen everything. He's been around with a lot of the best fighters out there. So he knows, you know, he's just an old slick veteran, man. And it, sometimes it's hard to fight these guys. But, you know, in the case of Caleb, he did enough to where, you know, he didn't struggle to win. He won the fight. And I thought he won every round. So it was a good outing for him.
Yeah, great young man. We've had him on the show a few times, and looking forward to having him back. You know, he's a great, great young prospect. Ryan, some good fights coming up this weekend. And in particular, Tony Bradley, Brandon Rios. A lot is being made about the change from Jorge Diaz to Teddy Atlas. Ronnie, I mean, you know, we all talk about, you know, Teddy being, you know, that steadfast, straightforward type of trainer, but is there really a lot of difference in technique between Teddy and Hall? Do you think maybe it was just a matter of a time to move on rather than a change in technique?
Well, you know, I think with Joel, you know, Joel Diaz, his style is different than Teddy Atlas' style. Teddy Atlas got that go-get-em kind of style, you know, a defensive style that, you know, makes you get close. And basically, you know, defense and then offense right behind it, you know. And I've never seen Timothy fight in that manner. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he adapts to that style, if in case that's the style that they are using. We don't know, because nobody has seen what they've been doing in the gym. So we won't know until fight night, exactly what Timothy Bradley is going to do. But, you know, Joel Diaz is a very good trainer. He had Timothy boxing. You know, the thing about it is he was good enough to beat Manny Pacquiao. You know, Joel was good enough to beat a lot of fighters that Timothy fought. And they won a lot of championships together, you know. And so, you know, change happens all the time. You know, this isn't the first time change has happened, and this isn't going to be the last time change is going to happen. So, you know, fighters have to do what they have to do, and trainers have to do what they have to do also. You know, and I think in this case, you know, in their case, you know, from what I read and from what I understand is that, you know, Timothy Bradley's wife is the one who wanted to make the change. And obviously Tim, you know, he felt it too because he agreed with it and, you know, that this is the reason he did it, you know. And I think, I think, you know, we'll find out whether it was a good change for them or not. You know, the thing about it is if Timothy loses, then who are you going to blame? Are you going to blame Ted Atlas? Are you going to blame Timothy? Or are you going to blame Timothy's wife? Are you going to blame all three? You know? And, you know, that's the thing about boxing, though. You know, boxing is very interesting, and a lot of interesting things happen throughout the course. So, you know, it's a wait-and-see thing, you know. And if Timothy wins and he looks good, then they go all praise Ted Atlas and, you know, so it's a 50-50 shot on, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah, you find it very interesting, you know, like you said, you know, with all of the puzzles that they were able to solve together, now all of a sudden, you know, you might want to, you know, to me it's kind of like changing horses in the middle of the stream, but, you know, that's why I'm on this side of the ring and not on the other. Chris Algieri is coming back to the ring. He's going to be added to the Danny Jacobs, Peter Quillen card. What do you think about Chris's return to the ring, and what do you see for the young man?
Well, you know, I mean, I like Chris Algieri. I think he's a very good style. You know, he's one of these kids that, you know, he's a very good boxer, man, and that's what he is. And, you know, he proved that he can fight. And, you know, I think he's an exciting guy. I think people want to see him, you know, especially in New York, because that's where he's from. And, you know, I'm glad for him. I'm glad he gets that opportunity.
The gentleman that he's supposed to be fighting is Mr. Eric Bone. Are you familiar with Eric at all?
No, not at all.
He's a 16-2 fighter out of Ecuador. I believe I'm not exactly sure. He was on an undercard, I believe, not too long ago. But I'm just looking forward to seeing Chris back in the ring. I think it's been a while. And like you said, you know, in New York at the Barclays Center, I'm sure they'll make him feel at home for his return to the ring. Ryan, another fight that we have to talk about, Mr. Gary Russell, he's going to be defending his title. What do you think about Mr. Gary Russell and his return to the ring?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy for Gary. You know, Gary is a really, really good fighter. He's one of the best featherweights in the world. And obviously because, you know, he's champion of the world now. And I know he's looking forward to getting back in the ring. You know, he's been out for a little while since he won the world title. And, you know, and I think fighters, man, they really get excited by after you win the world title. You know, that's what you want to do. You want to defend it. And he's been out for a little bit, but now he's back, and I think he's really looking forward to showing people that, you know, he's one of the best featherweights out there, that he want to keep his title.
Yeah, Gary's, you know, great family, especially when you think of, you know, of families that's been through the amateurs, paid their dues, coach, Russell, great guy. Ronnie, there's a possible fight in the making, and I just want to know what you think about it here, because I thought it had a kind of funny backstory. We have unbeaten junior middleweight Liam Smith is supposedly fighting Mr. Shane Mosley, but it seems Mosley is the one who thinks that he can dictate the demands. Ronnie, is Shane being a little, for lack of a better word, silly here, considering that, you know, maybe this is his opportunity as much as it is Liam's?
Well, I think Shane is living in the past. You know, he's living in the past in the fact that he thinks he can dictate everything. He thinks his name is big enough to where everyone wants to see him, and that's just not true. You know, that's just a false fact that, you know, he's living in the past. You know, I think he got too many people in his ear telling him, you're the man, you're the man, you're the man, and he's not the man. You know, Shane doesn't demand anything. I think, you know, people loved Shane when he was on top, you know, when he was beating the Delahoyers and people like that, and, you know, and the Margaritas, and, you know, people loved him then. And, you know, fighters have a problem with thinking that because they're still fighting, that they bring everything to the table. All he had to do is go and look at his pay-per-view with Mayaga and see that it did nothing, you know? I mean, you know, and that's just the thing that, you know, guys, somebody that's around them need to go and say, okay, look, man, we got to go and we got to regroup and we got to see what's out there for us, you know? Okay, we can't dictate anything. We have to, you know, we have to take a little to get a little. Now, if Shane was champion of the world, I can understand him saying, you know what? Okay, you know, I want to, you know, if he was champion, he would say, I want an immediate rematch clause. And the other guy wouldn't have no choice but to take it. But since the other guy is champion, and he said, we don't want a rematch clause because we ain't going to need a rematch clause. So you either take it or leave it. And he left it because he thought he was going to make the fight. But Liam Smith them already moved on because now they're trying to make a match with Carlos Molina. So, you know, that should let you know what they think about it.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, a lot of fighters some of these fighters are living in the past and don't realize that, you know, they're not the ones that necessarily dictate terms anymore. Ronnie, an interesting book came out this week, and it's called Ezra Charles, A Boxing Life, and it kind of talks about the boxing of the life of one of the greatest light heavyweights of all time. Ronnie, what's your memories of Ezra Charles and what he contributed to the game of boxing?
Well, you know, Ezra Charles was a really good fighter, and, you know, I think when we look at boxing, boxing back then was so different than it is today. You know, you only had one champion in each weight division, and you know who the champions was. You know, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Everybody knew who the light heavyweight champ was, who the heavyweight champ was. You know, it wasn't all this confusion that they have today. So, and back then, these guys, they fought. They was fighting every week, you know. I mean, really and truly, you know, when you go and all you gotta do is go look up these guys' records and you're wondering how these guys were having 100 and 200 fights because they stayed busy. They fought and defended the title almost every other week these guys was fighting. So that's how you knew who Ezra Charles and Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, you know, you knew all these guys because they fought often and they didn't care who they fought. It wasn't no pick and choose. They always fought the top guys out there. And that's why, you know, everybody know who Ezra Charles is.
Yeah, like you said, these guys fought every week. They fought whoever was there in front of them. And a lot of times, for what today's fighters have for their purses, it's for what we could consider back in those days little or nothing. Ryan, we got a few good fights coming up here so far. They're talking about a Kovalev Pascal too. Ronnie, would you want to see that?
Not at all. I don't see what's going to change. Again, the problem is that, Kovalev has nobody to fight, and that's a big problem. As good as he is, he can't negotiate with nobody else because of his HBO contract. And it's a shame, and that's going to hurt him a lot because he just has no opponents. And it's not to say that his HBO contract is a bad contract, but you just can't negotiate with them because, he wants everything, that's going to be a hard sell to the public when, he's going to be fighting guys that nobody really know or guys that he's already beaten. So, the crazy thing is he has to go back to Canada, in order to generate any interest as far as fans are concerned, because nobody knows Kovalev in the States. He can't fill up an arena in the States. So he has to go back to Montreal. And it's a shame because he's such a good fighter. But I really think that HBO contract hurt him bad.
Ronnie, is Triple G in somewhat of the same circumstance?
Absolutely not. The difference between Triple G is he can always find opponents. He can always find opponents, but you know what? He's different. He's different in the fact that, look at him, he just fought on pay-per-view. Kovalev never fought on pay-per-view and probably never will fight on pay-per-view as far as it's concerned because Adonis Stevenson is at Showtime and Kovalev is at HBO. And they're not going to release him out of his contract to go and fight on another network. So he's stuck. But I think the difference between the two is with Triple G is that, he has a lot of opponents that he can face. That's number one. Number two is that, he can fight Cotto or Canelo. All he has to say is, well, I come down to whatever weight y'all want me to, if that's the case. But he said he's not going to do that. But it's a lot of guys want to fight Triple G because they know that's where the money is. And it's just the opposite of Kovalev.
Well, the reason why I'm asking, Ryan, is if the numbers are true and him and Lemieux only made 150,000 pay-per-views, how is Triple G going to sustain a pay-per-view format? And who would his opponent be?
Well, here's the thing. I think this is where HBO gonna have to step in. HBO gonna have to step in and say, look, man, we got all of you guys on the promotion of contract. Under television contract. We want to make this fight happen. You guys gonna have to come to an agreement. Kovalev don't have that situation because everybody else is with Showtime. And that's the difference with Kovalev. But the thing is with HBO is, HBO has Cotto and Canelo under contract. So it's easier for them to make fights for Triple G than it is for Kovalev because everybody else is not with HBO.
Now, Ronnie, what did you think about the head of HBO Sports stepping down this week? I mean, even though I believe it's not going to be until the first of the year, am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I read that, you know. I mean, look, man, you know, think about jobs, you know, people move on. And obviously, you know, he felt it was time for him to make a move. And that's what he did.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't usually think of HBO executives. This was only his third year, I believe, something like that. He was just appointed in 2012, 2013, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I just thought it was, I found it kind of unexpected. You hadn't really heard any rumblings or anything in the background. So I just thought it was, you know, like you said, sometimes it's just time to move on, but I just thought it was kind of, you know, unusual, just all of a sudden, you know, with you know, you usually when you have a big change like that, there's usually some type of whispers or rumblings. And I never heard any or saw anything on in media print.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't either. I think it's, you know, obviously just a decision that he decided it was time for him to step down. Maybe he wanted to move on to something else in his career. I mean, who knows, you know, these things happen, you know, and, you know, I mean, I want to wish him luck in whatever his other endeavor is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it certainly wasn't a matter of finance. I'm sure that had the last, that was the last consideration. Ronnie, earlier this month, Lee Shelby came over here and made his American debut. He retained his IBF featherweight title. Now he's talking about he wants to see Leo Santa Cruz. Ronnie, how many fights do you think it'll take before Shelby's going to be recognized to fight some of our renowned champions here? Because I think Santa Cruz, there's quite a few people on his list.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, you know, the good thing about it is that, you know, Al Haymon advises Santa Cruz, and he advises Lee Shelby also. So it shouldn't be that hard to make if that's the direction they both want to go in. I think it has to be a doer thing before it happens. So I don't think it's going to be hard to make, you know. I think Lee Shelby didn't look as good as he possibly wanted to look in his first fight in America on national television. But, you know, he won, and that's all that was important. And now he does. He wants to fight the best. So, and that's a good thing, that champion want to fight champion. You know, I think that's what the fans want to see. And it's only fair that they do.
Oh, most definitely. Ronnie, you know, we've all talked about, you know, all of the dissension and, you know, about the PBC series and you know, Al Haymon's role in all of this. You know, one of the criticisms were, you know, hey, you know, the Al Haymon's fighters are going to be matched against Marshmallows. You know, you've heard all of them. But, Ronnie, it seems to me that, you know, all of these contests that we've seen on the PBC series, even some of the bouts like last night, for instance, Mr. Caleb Plant and you know, some of the prelims. Ronnie, most of these fights seem to be very competitive to me. What are the competitors talking about?
Man, I just people throwing stuff out. But, you know, but the thing about it is that the numbers don't reflect what people are saying. So who cares, man? You know, this is free television, and people are happy that, you know, they don't have to pay for a lot of the fights now. People that's fans of the sport, they, you know, they watching, and that's all that's important. You know, everything else, what people are saying, hey, you know, this and that, it doesn't matter, because, you know, you're going to always get some good fights. And and I think you got some competitive fights last night. You know, look, even some of the best fights, like with the Lemieux and Triple G fight, everybody, you know, talked about how good a fight was, it was going to be, but it ended up being a one-sided thing. And then people complain about it, you know. So, look, you're going to have complaints whether it turns out good or whether it turns out bad, you know. So some guys are just more skilled than others. That's just a fact. That's just like a football game or baseball game or whatever. You know, you'd be so excited to go and watch it, and then all of a sudden, one team just, it's their night. They clicking together. Everything is working together. Then all of a sudden, there's a blowout, and then people go talk about it. So, you know, this is sports. You know, in sports, things happen. Everybody have a good night sometimes, and people have a bad night sometimes. Sometimes both guys have good nights. And then, you know, it's very, very competitive then. So, you know, in sports, you take the good with the bad. If you love the sport, you're going to watch it. If you don't, you don't have to.
Very well put, Ronnie. Very well put. Ronnie, for the first time that I've ever seen or known of, we have a female on the cover of Ring Magazine. Ronda Rousey makes the cover of Ring Magazine. Ronnie, does this legitimize the UFC?
Not at all, because she's not a boxer. You know, that's the thing, you know. She's not a boxer. She's a MMA fighter. And so I don't know if one has to do with the other. You know, I don't know why they put her on there, you know, to what purpose to put an MMA fighter in the boxing magazine. So unless they just want to do a stir with her, maybe she's going to transform and become a professional boxer. Maybe. I haven't seen it. I haven't read it. So I don't know anything about it. You know, I just heard that she was on. She was gracing the Ring magazine. I mean, you know, maybe the Ring just want to start, you know, publicizing other sports. I mean, but other than that, I don't know why she would be on the Ring magazine. I mean, I have no clue.
Well, there was a rumor, I believe it was in Monday's online magazine, that perhaps Ronda will turn boxer, and the Golden Boy, Oscar himself, has offered to promote her. So, you know, I guess this is something that, you know, we'll wait and see. You know, but I did find it kind of odd, you know, as you said, you know, we have an MMA fighter on the front of the boxing Bible. I mean, this is what it was when I was a kid, and, you know, as I came along, you know, and it just seemed kind of out of place. But, you know, that's just my opinion. Ronnie, we have a delay. It's been postponed, the fight between Thurman and Sean Porter. But along with this postponement, Ronnie, we also got another announcement that PBC and Fox Sports are going to have a partnership, and their fights are going to start, I believe it is in January. January 23rd, I believe, is the first fight for Fox Sports. So, Bonnie, do you think that maybe the PBC series is delaying this fight to make it the premiere for the Fox Sports series?
Well, that's what I've been reading. You know, I read, just like everybody else, that they were in talks. But, you know, then the talks stalled. And then I read that they was holding it for January 23rd or something like that. So, you know, but I, you know, I can only tell you what I read, just like everybody else. You know, I think it's a good fight, you know, and I think, you know, it should, you know, it's one that people probably want to see, because both guys are really good fighters. And, you know, they make it, I think it's going to be great. But I think it'll be great that they do hold it for for the debut of Fox on, you know, so people can see it on Fox. I think that'd be great because that's a prime time fight.
Yeah, you know, I would like to see that fight. And whether it's on the 23rd or December 14th, it doesn't really matter to me. But I think that fight should be made. And hey, Fox, I think it would be a great way to kick off Fox. Ryan, let's talk a little bit about Lomachenko. He's going to make he's going to be defending his title on the undercard of that Timothy Bradley fight. I'm going to ask you the same question I ask. The Iceman, Ronnie, how long do you think it's with his body type, you know, and the way his career has been going? How long do you think Lomachenko can stay a featherweight, and you know, how many possible weight classes do you see him competing in?
Well, you know, I think he could be like a three division champion. Me myself, I think, you know, featherweight. Super lightweight, I mean, junior lightweight and probably lightweight. I can see him, you know, possibly being a three division champion. The guy's good. He really can fight. I really like him. But, you know, I mean, it's up to them when he wants to move up. You know, he says he can make featherweight, so as long as he can make it. Well, he said he could make featherweight, but he didn't. What he didn't want to do was fight Rigondeaux in the middle, you know. And I think it was only fair for Rigondeaux when Rigondeaux said, "Okay, we'll fight. We have no problem fighting." But you know, I'm a 22 pounder. You're a 26 pounder. So let's meet in the middle at 24. And they said no, you know. So obviously, that means he's having trouble, you know, fighting at 126. So. And I understand, you know, I mean, and I don't blame him for not wanting to do it, to go down to 124 to fight when you're doing the middle. But don't get mad at Rigondeaux if he says, look, I'm not a featherweight, and Rigondeaux is not a featherweight. I tell you right now, I know Rigondeaux can make 118 if that's what he really wanted to do. But, you know, he felt comfortable at 122, so this is the reason, you know, he's at 122. And he said, look, I'll go to 24, but I'm not going to give you the big advantage with me going up to 26. And I'm a small guy. And I'm telling you, Rigondeaux walks around at 126. So, you know, and like I said, he can make 118, and that's what he wanted to do. But he realizes there's no opportunities down there for him at 18. This is why he's at 122. And, you know, but this is the business. And this is not going to happen unless both guys agree to do it. And so Lomachenko, trust me, he really don't want to fight Rigondeaux at that lower weight because he knows the advantages all point to Rigondeaux and not to him. So, and he's a smart guy. So he, you know, he said, you know what, I'm going to stay at 126, and if you want to come up to fight me here, I'm here. But Rigondeaux just told him again, I'm not doing that. And I don't blame him. You know, I don't blame either guy. But as far as Lomachenko, I think maybe, you know, another fight or two, you'll see him at 26 before he moves up to 130.
That's really interesting. I'm not sure, you know, whether he's going to take that power with him or not. You know, certainly he'll take the skill, but hey, like you said, you know, you can't blame. But Ronnie, what is next for Rigondeaux? What do you guys what are you guys planning? What do you see? I mean, you know, have they successfully shelved this man and his career?
Well, I mean, I just read yesterday where he was fighting. He's fighting December 14th or something like that. But he's fighting, I think, in the Dominican Republic or somewhere. And I saw where, you know, the WBA, you know, he's still WBA champion, but they made him champion in recess because, you know, they didn't approve the opponent. So he's fighting a really a non-title fight because the WBA refused the opponent. So, you know, that's why they put him in champion in recess, and they're letting two other guys, two top contenders, are fighting each other, and they're going to throw in the WWE banner with a 22-pound belt for them to fight for the title, and the winner has to fight Riggin, though. So that's, you know, that's what's going on with him.
Well, that was kind of the reason why I used the term shell, because, you know, I mean, basically, you're messing with this man's paper here.
Well, you know, again, man, you know, the WBA hadn't gave him a mandatory defense either. So, you know, it's so funny how these guys work, right? Like with Deontay Wilder. They say, okay, you have to fight Povetkin by such and such a date. Otherwise, we're going to strip you of your heavyweight title. Okay? Now, this WBC. Okay? WBA is doing it to everybody else also. But they're not doing it to Riggin, though. They're not giving him a mandatory. WBO didn't give Riggin a mandatory. You know? So why are you giving all these other guys mandatory, but you're not giving Riggin a mandatory? And, you know, and you have to fight by a certain amount of time. So my point to this is this. Deontay Wilder has until, I think, February or March to fight, you know, to work out a deal, had to fight his mandatory, who is Povetkin. Povetkin is fighting this week, I believe, or next week, or whenever he's fighting. Oh, no, November 21st, I believe. But anyway, so in the meantime, Deontay is just having voluntary defenses until he signs for his mandatory. So now Deontay didn't have to take these voluntary defenses. He didn't have to. He could wait. He could have waited and say, you know, I'm just going to wait until I fight Povetkin. Now, he could have done that. And there's nothing anybody would have said because, you know, because he got to make a deal to fight his mentor. So, but Deontay chose, hey, I'm going to keep on fighting until it's time for my mentor. And everybody is fine with that. You know why they're fine with that? Because he's making them money. Because he's paying sanctioning fees. So with Riggin, though, they didn't give him a mandatory. So if you don't have a mandatory, you can sit out as long as you want to. Because you don't have to take a voluntary fight. You only have to make your mandatories. But they are mad that he's sitting out and not making money for them. So this is why they stripped him. They did Demetrius Andre the same way. He had a mandatory against Jermell Charlo, but Demetrius the one pulled back from that. He pulled back from that, and that's the reason they stripped him.
Tangled web, Ronnie, but you have two guys fighting this month that we're very familiar with. One on the 13th, Mr. Edwin Rodriguez. Ronnie, tell us about your progress.
Oh, man, our progress is great. But now, you know, we have three guys on the card now. We have Edwin Rodriguez, we have Darwin Price, and we have Steve Lovett. So those three guys will be fighting in Biloxi, Mississippi on Spike TV November 13th. So we just added Steve Lovett to the card about 3 days ago.
Okay. Glad to hear Mr. Lovett getting back in the ring. Along him, like you say, Darwin, Cowboy, all that young stable that you have. Ryan, the 25th, though I believe it is, in Hialeah, Florida, Mr. Here's Randy Laura. Ryan, how's your progress?
Oh, our progress is great, man. Laura's really grinding right now. You know, he's really training hard, man. He wants to look good in front of all the Cuban fans that's going to be there live and in person. And then he's, you know, he just wants to put on a good show. And also I have my heavyweight, John Wesley Nofa. He's fighting on the card also. So, you know, we got two guys on that show. So we're looking forward to, you know, a great night on November 25th also.
What was your new heavyweight's name again?
His name is John Wesley Nofa.
Now, Ron, when we hear that name, John Wesley, that usually means it's a nightmare. can we get a little insight into your new prospect here?
Yes, well, you know, he's 14-0 as a heavyweight. This will be my first fight with him. He's fighting this Cuban guy named Yosemite Consagora. And that's the same guy that fought my other heavyweight, Arthur Spilker, in his last fight. You know, Spilker stopped him, I think, in the fourth round. But, you know, with Nofa, you know, Nofa is actually a native Indian. And he's really from Oklahoma. But he's living between Miami and Oklahoma, but he's moving back to Oklahoma right after this fight, actually, and because his wife, you know, has a job back there. So, but he'll be training here in Houston. So, in between fights, he'll be here, and then going back to Oklahoma after this fight. But he's been here with me now for about 6-7 weeks. About 7 weeks, he's been here, and we've been working hard. And you know, he's going to probably be on ESPN 3. I'm not exactly sure, but I think they're going to put him on ESPN 3 before Lara fight.
And when can we expect to see Mr. Spilker back in the ring?
Well, Spilker will be back in the fin on NBC, actually, December the 12th in San Antonio. And he's gonna fight. We're scheduled to fight Amir Mansour.
Oh, okay, yeah. Most of us are familiar with Mansour's work. Well, Ronnie, man, as usual, every Sunday, time always flies when we're having fun. It's been about 60 minutes. It doesn't seem like it, but why don't you tell all the fans whatever you have coming up in Plex and, you know, anything that you might want to give us as a final word, my man.
Yeah, you know, we have a bunch of fights coming right now. We have 13 professional fighters in the gym right now. Everybody's slated for a fight from now until December 12th. And, you know, it's going to be, again, November 13th on TV. That's Evan Rodriguez. November 25th, Arislandi Lara and John Wesley Nofa. December 11th here in Houston, a showbox card. We have a kid named Steve Woodall is making his showbox debut. And I have another kid named Grant Pee Wee Cruz who's making his showbox debut also. And that's December 11th. Then December the 12th, we have five guys in San Antonio with Arthur Spilker fighting on NBC against Amir Mansour December the 12th. And that's live on NBC on Saturday night.
Hey, man, as always, thank you so much for your time, man. We appreciate all you do for the show and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thanks, man. Have a good night.
You too. Well, everyone, we bring another into the weekend wrap. Thanks to Mr. John Scully and to Ronnie. Look forward to seeing you all next week. And don't forget that Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner, definitely have Mr. Caleb Plant. Looking forward to securing Mr. Tony Harrison as well as Jamel Charlo. So along with John Scully's man, Mr. Miguel Cruz. So have a great night, everyone, and come check us out Tuesday on the Pugilist Corner. Have a great night, all. See you next week.